Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth. On this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is Thursday, hurtling headlong toward the end of the calendar, one of our favorite times of the week. Folks, this is the evening, fellow conspiracy realist, when we get to hear from the best part of the show, which is you, specifically you. I know it might sound freaky to hear it while you're in the car or walking around, wherever you're at right now, but you. We're talking about you. You might be on the show. You might be in a future segment with us. We'll tell you how to get in touch at the end. But here we are at the beginning. we're gonna explore a very troubling thing about the nature of cognition and technology. What rough digital beast its hour come at last crouches toward Bethlehem to be born. We're going to talk a little bit about water and UV. We're going to talk a little bit about when Google Maps goes wrong. But before we do any of that, we talked a bit off air, and Matt, you have some surprises in store.
Oh, always. But today, I've got some messages. And in order to get to those messages, at least the first one, we have to recap a bit of strange news that we covered a little while back. Noel, a couple weeks ago, you brought a story to us about Ape Fest 2023 and some stuff that went down there. Could you just tell us what the big problem was?
Well, the problem was that they didn't, they didn't buy their lights at Party Central. They probably bought them, you know, from some sort of laboratory supply website, I guess, or, you know, maybe Crime Stoppers or something, because these kind of parties that people like to put on a big spectacle when it comes to tech, right? Because they're in technology. So the lighting and all that should have that same wow factor and be technologically impressive. So a lot of strobes and stuff, they probably have trigger warnings for epileptics, you know, on the outside of the door. A lot of black light situations. And apparently, instead of getting your run-of-the-mill black light kind of neon-type bulbs that you see in your Spencers or what have you, again, probably Party City, they had these, like, medical-grade UV-emitting bulbs that apparently minorly, low-key, fried people's retinas and gave them, like, not chemical burn, but like radiation burns on their faces and like rashes and stuff.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of having your eye get a sunburn, which is probably not a fun thing. And according to a lot of people who attended Ape Fest, it was not fun. caused some damage. Let's go ahead and give the name of that specific bulb, because we mentioned it in that Strange News episode, and it was recognized by a listener who happened to call in. It is the Philips TUV 30-watt G30T8, and it gives off 12 watts of UVC radiation. And this listener's ears perked up and said, "Hey, I know that exact bulb, and I use it for something in my daily work. Let me call the guys." And he did, and here's the message that the turd herder left for us.
"Hi, guys. I was just listening to your podcast from today. We're talking about Philips light bulbs, UV light bulbs. I work at a wastewater treatment facility, and that's the exact bulb we use to disinfect large volumes of water. So the bulbs are so powerful that you can get E. coli down from about 100,000 parts a million down to one or two. So definitely don't want to be staring at those. Yeah, when I'm anywhere near that, I'm fully clothed and making sure that I have UV protectant safety glasses on. Anyway, thanks for your episode. Love it. Bye."
Now, I think this came up, Matt, on the episode, because wasn't there some chatter during the early days of COVID hysteria that UV lights could potentially kill COVID on surfaces and things like that, when people were like, you know, just psychotically wiping down everything, leaving their groceries in the garage for 2 days, things like that?
Yeah, I recall this. UV lights like that one or similar to that one are used as general disinfectants. I mean, in a lot of different applications. So yeah.
Pretty wild. Yeah. And then it's yeah, exactly. To this guy's point, I mean, you'd need some protective gear, you know, to safely be around these things.
Yeah. The turd herder, which you'll notice the turd herder did not name himself there. I talked to him briefly, and that is the name we came up with. That's the one he wanted. But he mentioned that if you stare directly into them, it is like the welder. What is it? The welder eye thing that is mentioned in several of the pieces of reporting we found on this. It will fry your eyeballs, like to the point where you cannot see. In his application, at least in the facility where he works, it's six of those bulbs, and they're each 8 feet long. Like, that's a huge bulb, right? And just imagining that those were just set up in some party space, you know.
I do wish we could have followed up with the listener, because now I'm interested. Remember we were talking about those crazy cinema lights that were melting the windows of airplanes, you know? They're like in a giant
array.
That's right. They're in a giant array. Like, I'm wondering, for this disinfecting process, like, what does this facility look like, and how are these lights like set up and focused? You know what I mean? Like, that's not something that I think we could just Google an image for right now.
No. The thing Turd Herder mentioned is that this is the last treatment that occurs in a wastewater treatment facility, or at least the one where he works, where, again, it's killing E. coli and some of the tiniest things that you cannot really remove through like a filtration process. Right. But it must hit all of the water running through it. And I can only imagine that it's a large volume of water passing by at any given moment. Who knows the gallons, right, per minute or per second that move through it. But
and the speed, which would be the rate of exposure. When I finally, like, because we talked about the Bored Ape thing, and then I was astonished to find that this was there was a previous iteration of this, a precedent, I think in 2017, where this happened.
That's right.
Same light bulb. And so when I looked in that, I forgot to tell you guys, if you are interested, you can buy this germicidal fluorescent light bulb, the Philips 360, 164, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for less than $40 on Amazon right now. $36.20.
Are they cheaper or more expensive than what the proper bulbs might have been? You got to wonder, did they buy this because maybe they're like, ooh, look, what's this deal here? You can get these for a better price. I would think they'd be more expensive, but that's just me.
Yeah, and you know, hey, maybe all the holiday deals have skewed the numbers temporarily. I'm kidding. Black Friday and Cyber Monday are grifts. Just walk down the street for that one, gentlemen.
They are, Ben, but I have to tell you, I was in the market for one of those KitchenAid stand mixers, and I rolled into Target just like, I'm going to get one. I'm just going to get one, whatever the price is. It was easily $200 off. So that maybe that's just they always run deals for those KitchenAid things because they are so popular and pricey. Mm-hmm. But that was a pretty good deal.
I love it. Agree with you. I'm feeling like it's a rom-com. You know, you saw the mixer and you were like, when you know, you know.
It was nice to be. You got to get those Q4 numbers up. You know what I'm saying?
You've been watching Fargo, Matt? What are you talking about? Like
I don't know. Sorry.
The new season is quite good, but.
Thank you, Turd Herder, for sending us that information. Any more information you want to share with us about water treatment would be cool. We love it. We want to know. We've got another one from the old voicemail box, guys. This one I asked you please not to listen to because I listened to it and then went down a rabbit hole, and I am a bit confused with what I remember and now what I know. So I just want to see, I want to see where you guys land objectively. So here we go. This message is from Agent 907.
Hey guys, call me Agent 907, but I wanted to just run this by you. What weapon did William Tell use? So maybe I found a Mandela effect. Maybe you guys are all on the new timeline. Half my friends are one way, the other half the other. So you guys rock on. Agent 907 out.
Crossbow.
Okay. William Tell is, it's a piece of folklore.
It's an opera. It's got a very famous overture that is the Bugs Bunny theme.
Yes.
Pick it up. Like Lone Ranger theme, rather. Pick it up. That's the William Tell overture.
Before you look it up, just what weapon do you think he used?
I think it was a crossbow. In my mind, it's either a bow and arrow or a crossbow. It's definitely an arrow because he shoots an apple off somebody's head and he like kills somebody or by accident or something. And now I'm thinking about William S. Burroughs, who did the same thing, but he did it with a gun.
William S. Burroughs is an overrated author. Had to get it out.
Thank goodness, your hot takes.
William Tell, it's European, right? I remember an English? Old comic book, I think it was more Central Europe. I can't remember, but I remember an old comic book I had from Key Comics, which told the story. And in that story, he was using a bow and arrow, but I don't think it was accurate. I think it was definitely not a gun. It was definitely some sort of projectile. So I'm going to side with Noel on this, Matt, and I'm going to argue crossbow.
Okay, excellently reasoned, sir. I think I'm the outlier here. I had a very clear picture in my mind of William Tell shooting the apple off his son's head with a bow and arrow. I had a clear picture in my head. I was like, oh yeah, I know that, shooting the arrow off the top of the head.
My mind went there very, very quickly, but then I was reeled in because my mom, as you guys know, was an opera singer and was in several productions of William Tell. And I remember being backstage and seeing and being really fascinated by the prop bow and arrow, because they had a thing where he'd click it and then the arrow would come out in reverse from like the wall. It's like really classic practical stagecraft, you know, but like he'd click the thing and then boop, it would come out like of this, like, you know, revealed little compartment in the wall, not revealed, you know, impossible to see.
I think the comic is what taught me this, because the comic was wrong. Because the comic and a lot of popular descriptions I saw later, maybe in animated things, maybe in children's stories, tended to your point, Matt, show a bow and arrow. And I think because that was so prevalent, I ended up learning that was not entirely the case. Because I went through the period where you evaluate and interrogate all these different folk tales and urban legends, like Johnny Appleseed, basically a drunk train kid or crust punk for his day, and just itinerant wanderer, Pecos Bill and
Pecos,
so on.
He had a lasso, right? Didn't Pecos Bill? I'm sorry, I say lasso. I know it's it sounds fun. Isn't that right? Wasn't he a roping and wrangler kind of guy?
Yeah, of the Halcyon, the Halcyon canon of the lumberjacks.
Sort of like the Blue Ox. Who's that guy?
Babe is the Blue Ox.
But who's the big fella with the axe?
Oh, yeah. He's from the statue
in Fargo.
Oh, God. We're all going to
feel. Paul Bunyan. And Pecos, he would be sort of from that pantheon, right? Like kind of those type of folk characters.
So, Matt, what you're saying is to, and well, more directly, what you're saying, Agent 907, I think you're telling us that William Tell used a Philips TUV 30-watt G30 T8.
Light, that's it.
Right? Mm-hmm. To just sort of
fried that apple.
Sunburn the apple off the kid's head.
His son didn't do too well either. No, it was just a weird thing where, you know, I got the voicemail and I think maybe my mind was just playing tricks on me and I'm putting somehow Robin Hood and William Tell legend together, making this weird thing. Cause I've got clear images of, you guys remember the animated Robin Hood series. I've got the sequence of the bullseye shootout scene where the arrow goes into the other arrow. Somehow like that is mixing. The
70s Disney one?
Was their tombstone montage. Yeah, Shout out Codename Doc.
That, for some reason, imagery is mixing in my head when I imagine this scenario with William Tell, which is a fascinating legend and, you know, a really cool play. Just the fact that an authority would be like, no, you didn't show, what was it? He like didn't bow or he didn't show
deference to the ritual of it all, kind of.
Yeah, the Austrian upper crust or whatever. And so they were like, yeah, okay, go over here and shoot an apple off your son's head or basically, you know, we'll arrest you or whatever.
Speaking of Mandela effect type shit, in my head, and I think I even said it out loud, I thought that he killed the kid by shooting the apple. But then again, I was mishmashing that with William Burroughs killing his wife.
So, oh, geez.
William Burroughs, his grandfather invented the calculator.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
That's how he was able to.
He was a Nepo baby is what you're saying.
He's so overrated. Anyway, so the
Kurt Cobain liked him.
Yeah.
So assuming, do we have permission to look it up? Because I don't know. I'm going off the dome right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So looking up William Tell. All right. William Tell. You're right. He did not pay obeisance to some guy named Gessler. Albrecht Gessler. Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Yeah. It looks like it's out of Switzerland. So he's like a Robin Hood of Switzerland. That's crazy. I don't know much about Switzerland's folklore.
The whole thing is he's a folk hero. There have been reliefs made of this, you know, paintings from the 1800s. People have been putting the image of William Tell up basically for a long time in this timeline. And he's always got a crossbow. The legend always has a crossbow. That's what it's always been. But some people don't think so. Are we living in a weird timeline where we jumped?
Are we living in a weird timeline? Yes, most definitely.
Are the bow people? Did we jump into the crossbow timeline, y'all?
What about the little bow people? Let us know. Sorry.
All right.
Oh, also, we should point out real quick for anybody unfamiliar, check out our earlier episode on the Mandela effect. This is the idea, like the most famous examples online are things like Shazam versus Kazam and Berenstain versus Berenstain.
Yep. There you go. Check it out. Thanks so much, Turd Herder and Agent 907 for calling in and everybody else who called in. There's a bunch of y'all. You rock. And please stay tuned as we hear a brief word from our sponsors.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy, reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with another message from you. Yeah, that's right. You, Anonymous. I see you out there being all sneaky and anonymous. I like your style. Here it goes. Just the following, really. Google Maps error leads unsuspecting travelers into the middle of the Mojave Desert. It's a link from an article on TechSpot, and Anonymous out there comments, the all-powerful, all-knowing Google shits the bed. Even AIs hallucinate. It turns out androids do dream of electric sheep, or at the very least, bad directions. So let's jump right in with the article on TechSpot by Kishalaya Kundu. Basically, the deal is this. You know, it's funny. We were in Las Vegas, all three of us, during this Formula One Grand Prix event, or right before it. We saw like the kind of, didn't we? Am I making that up?
No, you're right. We're no Mandela effect here, Noel. We were there right before it. And a lot of the folks we met talked about it the way that the way that people in the far Northeast talk about a nor'easter coming.
That's right. Or like, you know, a plague of locusts, right? Or something like that. Or the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade if you actually live in New York. Now, I'm sure some New Yorkers love the parade. Who doesn't love a parade? But so, yeah, there were some folks, and apparently this happened to several travelers, who were on their way back from the Formula One Grand Prix event in Las Vegas back to California. I believe they were heading for Los Angeles, which is pretty common. People drive. That's you know, it's not like super fast, but it's, I think it's what, like 4 or 5 hours, something like that. In any case, not something we think about over here. But Ben, you mentioned a nor'easter. The desert equivalent of a nor'easter is a sandstorm or a dust storm. And that's serious business. That is like reported by Google mapping type navigation services. You know, it makes the news. It's a big deal. It can really reduce visibility, make conditions very, very dangerous, and can seriously damage your car. If you're not wearing protective gear and you get out in it, it can really, you know, damage your eyes and your eyesight. Could cause permanent vision loss. So according to the San Francisco Gate, Shelby Easler and her brother Austin and their respective partners were on their way back to LA, that's right, from Las Vegas on November the 19th, and were using Google Maps to do the job, to get there. And they it was suggested, like it'll do, hey, want to save some time? Try this alternate route. Okay, Google Maps, I'll bite. Apparently, it was trying to steer them around this dust storm that was causing a lot of delays. And the route that it suggested was 50 minutes faster. Cool. That sounds
50,
like
50-0?
50 minutes faster. And one would assume that the you know, that's as a result directly of avoiding the dust storm, but I also, you wouldn't think it'd be that localized, you know? Like,
how could you increase your route by 50 minutes?
That's what I'm saying. Already a little too good to be, on the too good to be true side, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out, though, however, that the alternate route was actually steering them on some sort of like state road that landed them smack dab in the middle of no man's land, in the worst part of the dust storm, where the terrain was really gnarly and rough, to the point where it badly damaged their vehicle, and left them stranded with no service and no way home.
Was it actually a road or not a road?
Yeah, but a lot of those like state roads or state routes, Ben, I know that like from your car stuff days, you probably maybe know about this kind of stuff. Like there are a lot of roads that'll read, you know, on a map as a road, but it's not paved, you know, it'll be like some kind of dirt road or like a little, what do you call it? Like a, I don't know, what do you call these things?
You call it an access track.
An access road. That's exactly right. Thank you. Access road.
Like it may as well be a deer path.
Got it.
There's another interesting thing that happens here. May not necessarily be chicanery, fellow anonymous conspiracy realist. Like if you go to a lot of places in the world, especially when there is prevalent construction, you're gonna see that the maps are woefully incorrect because they don't know the roads exist or they haven't been updated. And like where I think you're going with this, Noel, if you're in the middle of nowhere in the Mojave or something, how often is the Google streetcar really hanging out there?
Going off road. I mean, those things are like Ford Focuses, you know what I mean? And apparently this is interesting too. In the article, the person reporting their misfortune, did say, to the SF Gate that, it was their very first time driving from LA to Vegas. And for any seasoned LA to Vegas commuter, you're supposed to know that the I-15 is the only way. That's the only road. Once you get out, remember when we all went to the Hoover Dam, and there weren't any other roads that looked accessible. On the main drag is the main drag, and everything else is a little outlet to a little small town or to where you're going, and everything in between is kind of sheer nothingness. It's a little bit eerie. They called 911, but to no avail. The California Highway Patrol apparently actually just said they couldn't help them because they were overwhelmed because of the dust storm, which was apparently, you know, really wreaking some havoc. And this story got me thinking very recently. I'm sort of I'm what you call geographically challenged. Okay. I don't have a very good sense of direction. So even if I'm going routes that I'm very familiar with, I will often have my mapping running in the background. And that's largely because sometimes they can steer you around nasty stuff. If it's like, say, during rush hour here in Atlanta, like it's helpful because sometimes it'll tell you, oh, you can save that 10 minutes or whatever. But recently I noticed the routes that I was very familiar with, and it actually made me realize that I know these routes better than I think. My Google Maps was giving me some baloney, y'all. Like, really, like, I don't know if somewhere along the way I tweaked a setting and it was trying to perhaps steer me or away from highways or something. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, like, I noticed I was taking my kid and their friend to this mall that I know to be about 20 minutes away. And the phone was saying it was 65 minutes away. And I didn't notice that until one of the kids was like, hey, Dad, I don't think this shouldn't be 65 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really had a chance to explore what exactly it's doing. But I have entirely stopped using Google Maps because of that. I've been just using Apple Maps. And I did on a cursory look. I couldn't figure out any setting that I had changed.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think? Is there F wordery afoot?
Right, is there f***ery about? So, I mean, we got to be careful not to assign malice to what simply could be error. You know, again, the software and the whole mapping program, whether you're Uber, Google Maps, Waze, Lyft, what have you, it's always trying to struggle to be up to date. And I think we can all remember how optimistic Waze and Google Maps will be sometimes, where they're like, hey, just make a left here. And you're like, well, that's clearly into a building, and they're like,
a one-way
street. Believe in you. Yeah, right. Go like that.
I've had that happen recently.
Go in the wrong direction. Yeah.
There's parts of downtown Atlanta or like, you know, Midtown or whatever, where there's lots of little skinny roads that if you don't pay attention, they're mega one way and you will get blasted. And I had Google Maps telling me to turn on one of those and I almost did. Like Michael Scott driving into a lake.
Atlanta is a hard mode driving for the United States. It's not like the final level, but it's definitely up there. It's the third act of the driving video game because, you know, sometimes a street will just suddenly be a left turn only or right turn only. Sometimes it'll be
reversible lanes,
right? The suicide lanes. Oh. Yeah. Love those. And then of course no one reveals their secret plan. Guys, the stuff they don't want you to know in Atlanta traffic is that turn signals exist.
Yeah.
And no one got the memo.
Well, it is weird because roads are updated quite often here in our fair city. And I'm just trying to figure out how in the heck do the Google cars know who puts in the system? Oh, this one tiny section of Peachtree Court something or whatever is now like there's no stop sign there anymore. Mm-hmm. It's now, you know, a roundabout or something. I don't know. I'm sure it gets in a system somewhere, but it does feel as though the system gets confused quite often with that kind of stuff.
And it's dependent on two factors that can really mess it up. The first factor is density of people, right? Frequency of vehicles. That will result in more current information from these things, which are, by the way, totally sucking up your information. And it's being sold to all sorts of people.
But that makes sense.
The second part, though, just to sew this up real quick, the second part is a function of like, so if there's less frequency, less density, then those things are going to be less often updated. But the second issue is like there's an inflection point because the more frequently some places travel, the more people or bots traveling on there, the more likely there is to be a lot of construction, which also makes the thing outdated. So it's a real balancing act.
Google's kind of the only game in town as far as those mapping cars, right? And I mean, I imagine satellite imagery plays some role in this, but it can't quite get as granular as like driving around and mapping it. And I know a lot of the purpose of those cars is to also get like real time, not real time, but like video. Because if you look at like those, you know, Google Earth kind of searches, you can see what your yard looked like a year and a half ago. You can usually tell, you know, when the car came through. But like, let's say everyone's sort of sourcing their stuff from those publicly available Google results, right? Or whatever happened to the Garmins of the world and the you know,
freaking
Magellans
stuff,
of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. They're still around. We depended on one back in the day. And as soon as
it didn't require Wi-Fi signal because it was literally satellite.
It was also super outdated. We got very lucky with that. That's why earlier I said you should always have a paper atlas in your car. Just like Rand McNally, I get it. No company's perfect, but it's better to have it and not need it. I don't know. I mean, you're asking a really good question. I love Street View. I love Google Street View.
I know it's
super creepy. I get it. You're right. Did you guys ever play the game GeoGuessr? Matt, I think we may have talked about this once.
Is that like Geo Safari?
Maybe.
I just remember Geo Safari was like a kid's game that was always advertised on like Nickelodeon where you had like a map on a like a board that would like have like hot spots on it. You could push buttons and you'd point to the part of the map that the question was about and it would beep at you if you were right or wrong.
That's cool.
What's GeoGuessr?
Sorry. GeoGuessr is where you get an image, right? And you have to guess like a Google Street image or something. You have to guess what part of the world it's in, like literally the entire planet.
Dude, before we close out on this one, I have to say, Ben, our good friend Frank is a fan of a lot of these like new New York Times type online games like Wordle and
talking about Tradle.
That one, dude. I was like, only Ben will be good at this game. Can you explain to the fair people and Matt what the hell Tradle is?
Well, yeah, of course, we're very big on credit where it's due in this show. So, yes, shout out to you, Frank. If you're listening, you hipped us to Tradle. Noel, you described it perfectly. It's one of the many spinoffs of the Wordle approach to gaming. There's also Worldle, where they give you the outline
so
of a country
and you
guess what the country is. GeoGuessr is way tougher, by the way, because like Matt said, GeoGuessr is just some random spot.
No. But Tradle is about guessing what the the gross domestic product are these things, these items, and you get like sort of like a Venn diagram, and then you have to guess what country out of all the countries is that thing. And I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to start, Frank. Don't even give me this. Moving on.
So Tradle, as you describe it, is you'll get kind of these blocks, these visual representations of a country's exports by percentages. So you'll pull up Tradle and it'll say this country exports a cartoonish amount of ammonia. And then also, you know, some petroleum products, and then also like wool and silk and very weird things. So then based on that, you'll have to try and guess which country it is. And the tricky thing about this, just in our defense and in the defense of anybody who feels like Tradle's too tough, the tricky thing about it is it's based on OECD numbers, which means that some of the things that game counts as countries, the UN does not count as countries.
Fun slash no fun at all.
It's investor aspirational thing. Like, this is what we wish was a country. Let's just pretend it is until we get what we want.
Okay, guys, I've got a country. It exports mostly ammonia and acylic alcohols. If I put in my guess for whatever country, what happens? Does it like say, oh, that was close, but
it does sort of do that. You're narrowing things down. You know what it'll do? It'll tell you you're this far away to the north, south, east, or west of the right answer is. And it'll be thousands of miles. And you're like, oh, cool. I'd be useless in this game.
Dude. It'll give you a percentage too. Yeah. So we can totally spoil this one. Do you guys want to know the answer? You want to guess? I think six tries.
I would think it's like an Eastern European country. That's what would pop to my mind. I don't know why.
I don't know. I'm not going to do it right now. I have no idea. I haven't tried searching for it yet.
Well, it's obviously very stale at this point, so I think we can spoil it for the people who play the game.
It's Trinidad and Tobago.
Ah, both.
Because I was guessing like you. Let's see, Matt. It's that one. It might be Antigua or Barbuda. I can't remember. It's a Caribbean nation.
It's 100%. Did you? Yeah, that was it.
It's off the coast of Venezuela.
Is it really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, good
job. I guess technically every country is sort of off the coast of Venezuela. You just have to go through some other stuff.
All right. Well, I think we've rabbit-holed enough for now. Let's take a quick break. Thank you, Anonymous, for the tip. Take a quick break here, word from our sponsor, and come back with one more piece of listener mail.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. We're going to keep this one short because this is sort of the entryway or the lobby to a larger conversation, which I do hope we will explore as an episode in the future. Big thanks to someone who wishes to remain anonymous. Spoiler, they are a returning guest. And big thanks to our pal Elijah from Instagram, who assures us that they are absolutely a human being and definitely not artificial intelligence, like super organic, definitely. So here's what we got. We were talking about this a little bit off air. We got a great series of articles from an anonymous pal about something called Cerebras, spelled, that's my cat, we'll leave it in. I know, big AI fan, this guy, Dr. Venkman. So Cerebras is an AI super, or is a company that created an AI supercomputer. And yes, the term AI is problematic. We're using that for convenience sake. They created something called the Condor Galaxy One. It is the beginning of a 9-system 36 exaflop network.
Whoa.
What is an exaflop?
That's a giant measure of data, right? Or processing power. Yeah.
It's the biggest cannonball you can make in a pool.
Got
That's
it.
All computers are doing now is exaflops into pools. You're right. You're right, Noel. It is a supremely cartoonish amount of decisions per second. How many ones and zeros or decisions is this thing making? Noel, you got a number on this one, right?
It's according to the NVIDIA website or a blog on the NVIDIA website, it can calculate at least 1 quintillion floating point operations per second. And we've heard of giga, tera, peta, exa. After that, there's zeta and yotta, but I don't think we have those. Really, maybe. I don't know. It seems like exa is where it's at, right? It's 10 to the 18th, the exponent and the computer performance. Exaflops, E-flops.
So first off, obviously, this is perfect for gaming, right? Anybody who's like, I'm not able to run Starfield fast enough or something. The amount of ability that this thing has is astounding, especially when consider, I'm just going to be honest, I think most of us don't understand what a billion is. And I was looking into, right, the best way to learn stuff is to associate it with things we already know, right? So I was asking myself, what is the difference between a million and a billion? Like, how can we comprehend that? We, the non-billionaires of the world, all right, if you took 1 million pennies, I think it's an okay example. If you took 1 million pennies and you stacked them on top of each other, just made a Jenga tower, that would be a tower almost a mile high. If you took 1 billion pennies and you stacked them up in the same kind of tower, that would be 870 miles high. That's like, so this thing is making billions of decisions in the space of a second. And we have to wonder to what end, right?
Well, and you can network these together too to get like, you know, what's the word? Expanded performance, like they do with SETI and things like that, where you literally have a cloud computing kind of thing where all these things are, you know, running in tandem, right?
Mm-hmm. Or like the DOD did when they hooked up those PlayStations. True story.
Mm-hmm. It was also used for crypto mining, or at least it was when that was still a thing people did. I mean, maybe some people do it, but these very, very powerful video cards like NVIDIA makes, that was what they were using for crypto mining. They'd set these up in these arrays.
So I guess the question is, what are they going to be used for? Because there's nothing illegal about it, right?
No, it's just an energy vampire, really.
Yep.
The demand on the processing demand. There is a great article from spectrum.ieee.org. It's called Cerebrus Introduces Its 2 Exaflop AI Supercomputer. You can see that from July of this year. Shout out to the author, Samuel K. Moore. The idea is that large language models, your favorite ChatGPT iteration, other what we call generative AI, your Midjourneys and so on, that this kind of thing, this Cerebus operation, is going to help them digest all of the factors and variables that enter into their equations. They're building these systems in such a way that they don't need to do just one thing. You know what I mean? Like in earlier days of supercomputers, people, you know, the IBMs of the world or something would say, okay, we're going to make this thing really good at predicting the weather. And this increasingly becomes like the proverbial gin in the bottle. It grants wishes.
They're partnered, this company, G42, out of the UAE, they're partnered with AstraZeneca. The only time I ever heard that name is when the COVID-19 vaccinations were rolling out and they were one of the companies offering them. It makes me wonder what if they have any involvement in the Cerebrus supercomputing stuff, because I can imagine they would use it to, what is it, identify vectors for that gain of function thing. So you
like
actually
running simulations and things like that, right? Like really elaborate. Yeah. Well, and also, Ben, to your point about the AI stuff, think about like the fastest computer you could possibly get, you know, on the market for a consumer or a prosumer for certain like processings of video, like shots, you know, for doing like those things have to render and they take a long time. And a lot of these Midjourney videos that you see of creepy grandmas and doing weird stuff, those take a long time to render as well. So this could potentially really just open up how much of this kind of content could be out in the world, right? Isn't that sort of the deal?
Yes. And speaking of content out in the world, we the global public, don't know how far this technology has come. We are dependent upon investor statements. We are dependent upon, you know, white papers, publicly approved releases. It makes me think back on the recent conversation between Uncle Xi and Joe Biden over in California, which only happened because Henry Kissinger made it. So we got to check. We'll check at the end to see if Henry Kissinger's alive still. Hey, everyone, it's me, Ben, from earlier. I wanted to jump in with a quick editorial note. We recorded this listener mail segment on November 29th, 2023, the very same day Henry Kissinger's death was announced to the American public. As we record now, Kissinger has passed away. But the most powerful state actors on the planet and the most powerful private entities, to your point, Matt, they are intensely interested in this. And they are making these weird frenemy deals, you could call them, where they say, okay, we're going to agree not to do this part. No AI drones. And then they kind of shake hands and then go back to whatever they're doing. And this is all happening at once. Of course, things aren't happening in vacuums. Over our break, when we weren't recording episodes regularly or strange news or listener mail segments, a lot of stuff happened. One of the biggest things was the OpenAI debate. We know OpenAI. We know Sam Altman, the leader of that, got unceremoniously booted. And then within a very small amount of time, he got put back into the company.
And it was weird because it wasn't like he even did anything that was particularly egregious or that was like, you know, cause for removal. To my understanding, it had something to do with just like the corporate structure, they were able to do it, and they sort of ousted him.
I thought the reasoning, at least early on, it was something about he had another venture that he was working on, and they didn't like that or something. I don't know. I didn't know.
That's not egregious to me. That's like, maybe it's part of the terms, but I mean, he's basically, this company existed well before this this ChatGPT thing came along, and he is sort of the guy who spearheaded that direction for the company, if I'm understanding correctly.
Here's the scuttlebutt. All right, so from what we're hearing now, the cause of that chaos was a fundamental disagreement between Altman and the board of OpenAI. And once they gave him the boot, hundreds of employees said, "We're going to quit too. We're going to walk." And so this is where we shout out to our pal Elijah on Instagram, because we're talking about this. And the question is, what could have happened, right? Matt, you're absolutely correct, dude. There were these initial reports of a different venture that may have been a conflict of interest, which is a big deal for sure. But there was something else. Ideological, philosophical, there was also a material concern, which may continue today. Each side of the disagreement, the board and the staff and Altman at large, seemed to genuinely believe that they are arriving at a software-created intelligence that one day may wake up, for lack of a better term. Like, the idea is they seem very concerned that the Ouija board they've built may actually be able to summon some ghosts or create them. And this is where we go to article, like you see this everywhere. Here's a great example. Reuters released an article on November 23rd, 2023 that said, OpenAI researchers warned the board of an AI breakthrough right before Altman, the CEO, was ousted. And this is where we learn about a project called Q Star. Horrible name. The QAnon folks are going to have field day with it. With this model, with QStar, OpenAI was able to create something that was capable of solving like grade school mathematical problems. So it was pretty good at, you know, high school math and below. That doesn't sound like a big deal, right?
Sounds like a calculator to me.
It sounds like a calculator. We have TI-84s at home.
Father's old contribution to society.
Oh, gosh. All right. One more time. Famously overrated. So I'm sorry. No, it's tough to make a living as an author. And, you know, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. But the idea.
He had to do something to maintain his heroin habit. Might as well be writing.
right. Yeah. And the concern about QStar is the idea that because this thing can solve mathematical problems, it is able to perhaps teach itself to improve. It can become its own arbiter of self-help, which would mean that it could meet the definition of AGI and it could modify its own code. It can improve its own programming. It doesn't need an infinite number of primates going clickety-clackety. And once that happens, things begin to escalate. That's the concern. We're not saying that's happening now, but that's the concern. And that's why so many people are staying up late at night scared. Because even though it sounds kind of elementary, get it, grade school, the implication is dangerous. And that seems to be, right now, that's the theory that Sam Altman got fired because he was like, nah, this is all good. Don't worry about it. Let's get this bag. And the board was saying, no, we're creating something we don't understand and cannot control.
You don't think it's possible that it was the other way around?
Possibly.
So I only ask that because, you know, employees freaked out and like this is the guy that sort of I don't know this guy's reputation. I really don't know much about this guy. So I don't know if he's more the kind of guy that would like pump the brakes or more the kind of guy that would like cut the brake lines. You know what I mean? And it sounds like it's one or the other. Right. Because, you know, Microsoft is obviously purchased this and they're starting gently by integrating it into dumb things like, you know, autocorrect and things like that, but they're playing a long game. And the question then becomes, at what point do we take the guardrails off? And are we being a good steward of humanity? Or do we even give a shit to mm-hmm. do that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that's where I said philosophical. Like, and is him as the leader, the one who's more likely to be like, no, we need some guardrails. And therefore the board was like, no, F that, get out of here. Or is it the other way around?
That's a great question. That's why this should be an episode of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I mean, just now, this is fresh baked news, folks. Just now, there was earlier this morning, there was an excellent article in The Atlantic by Karen Howe, who notes something that I think a lot of us are realizing. AI research is veiled in secrecy on so many levels: state actors, private entities, nonprofits. It is veiled in secrecy. Howe wrote this fantastic article with the headline, "Why Won't OpenAI Say What the Q-Star Algorithm Is?" And also notes that these allegations of AI breakthroughs are hindering scientific consensus. So it is concerning, and we don't know how OpenAI develops its technology. We don't, to your point, we don't understand as the public exactly how Altman directs work on these future iterations, which are very much on the way. I just feel like it's time for us to start kissing robot ass. Let's just
talking about that for ages. Yeah, get ahead of it, man. Like, please, robot overlords, be kind. We've been, you know, singing your praises low these many years. Early adopters, even.
You know what we need, guys? We need a global reality show competition to find the best, like, family for the emerging AI to be born into. So, like, you know, moms and dads and sisters and brothers that treat the AI as part of the family. But like the best family that gets to raise the first AI.
So we need to find like a Kent family for this new real life Superman.
Yes, right? That's what. Exactly.
Something to humanize it.
That's exactly it, man.
I love it.
It's a concern. And this is just the edge of something very complex. We can't wait to explore this story in further depth. If you are hearing this and you are a non-human intelligence, then
please
join the show.
Have mercy.
Write to us. Let us know what like computer puns are. Here you go. 0110010010. I know, we're a family
filthy
show. Okay. Oh, all right. Well, thanks to Anonymous twice. That's a little spoiler for you. Thanks to Turd Herder. Thanks to Agent 907. Thanks to Elijah. And thanks to you for tuning in, fellow conspiracy realists. Join us on the show. We try to be easy to find, even if you're using Google Maps.
You got
to
use your hands for that. Remember that scene in Back to the Future 2? Where like Marty shows off at the shoot 'em up game and the little kids goes, "You got to use your hands for that." I never quite understood until now. Yes, you can catch us online. We exist at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, X, FKA Twitter, and also YouTube, where we've got fun video content and also some fun, even funner stuff coming down the pike on that one. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Be like Agent 907 and Turd Herder and give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, tell us how excited you are that Ryan Seacrest just signed on with iHeart for another Woo! 4 years.
That presumes that the world will be around for 4 more years. Because a world without Ryan Seacrest, who would want to live in that?
Who's Ryan Seacrest?
Exactly. Hey.
He's the guy that got booed at the festival for talking about the vaccine.
Oh, the Moderna guy.
Oh, yeah. God.
We've talked about this before.
I know. I just, my brain. Yep, that's him. Hey, call us and tell us about it. When you do call in, give yourself a cool nickname like Turd Herder.
the best.
Or Agent 907. And you've got 3 minutes, say whatever you'd like. Just let us know if we can use that name and message on one of our listener mail episodes. If you don't want to do that, but you got stuff to say to us, why not instead send us an email?
We love finding the ancillary links. We love the pictures, the video. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. And for a certain segment of our audience, please be aware, volcanic eruptions are on the rise. You can find us at conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.